23 years later, after my first drink, I was prostituting, getting in strange men's cars to do what I needed to do to get what I needed to get to try to continue the party. The party had long since sailed, but I was still trying my best to stay in that altered state so that I didn't have to contend with the wreckage of the last 20 years.
What's up, y'all? This is Nina Perez, and this is Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. I'm really excited that you're here. You guys have been putting me on the map, and I'm really, really grateful to you. All of you amazing straight talkers that have been going on and you downloading and doing all that stuff. I'm almost like 99,800 something downloads, which is super exciting. On top of that, I just got my listening notes, and I'm the top 1.5% podcast to listen to in the country. So I am super stoked and grateful for you, because you guys know that I try to get the best humans on the planet to come on here to grow, challenge, and transform your thinking. Well, I got someone for y'all. Yes, I do. I'm so excited. I've been waiting for this forever. Her name is Allison Doss. Now, Allison's life is a profound journey of resilience and hope, and overcoming years of addiction and facing life's toughest challenge, she emerged as a beacon of strength and vulnerability. I fell in love with her just talking to her pre-coming onto this podcast. Her story took a dramatic turn when her husband came out as transgender. It taught her like the deepest lessons in acceptance and the power of letting go. And Allison's authenticity and compassion, well, it just shines through as she shares her experiences. And that's why I cannot wait to get into this. So why wait? Let's do it. All right. Get your ears on, guys, because we are going to transform your life. So thank you so much for being here and hanging out with us, Allison. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. So I have a really cool audience, and they're like always like DMing, or they're always like leaving me comments and, you know, emailing me and stuff like that. And they love the guests. And I know you're about to light some fire up in somebody right now. I'm excited. I love conversations that are just real and authentic, and people who are vulnerable enough to share their story and know that it's for someone else, right? And so I'm really glad you're here. So before we get into all of that, I do want to know a little bit more about you. So Allison, who are you?
Nina, today I am a wise woman who daily works feverishly to shed all the narratives that I have been in my life. Wow. I have learned and daily take action to let go of all of my controlling and manipulative and defective ways of dealing with people and life and judging myself for it. So that's right. Who I am today.
Woo! All right, now we could just end the podcast. Let's just end the podcast. Because that is a lot of self-awareness. That's a lot of self-awareness, right? But that comes with a lot of backstory, right? Because self-awareness is usually when we've hit a wall. It's usually when we're at this place of like, what the F is going on? What am I doing with my life right now, right? So I know that I gave a little bit to the audience of who you were. And if you're comfortable with that, I'd like to touch into some of that. Yeah. Because this awareness that you're having and you fighting the narratives, that's a real freaking thing. And something I think a lot of us need to just like do in our life, honestly, is just fight these narratives. Because a lot of our narratives are not even our own. Sometimes it's when we were little and we just adopted them as our own, right? Yeah. So give me that, like, what journey brought you to that place of you going, you know what, I need to change the freaking narrative? What was that?
Well, the very first opportunity that I was given to see clearly that something needed to change was about 7 years ago. I was 40 years old at the time, and I was homeless, and I was living on the street in a very dark area of South Florida. And it was the tail end of 2 decades of addiction and alcoholism and sex work. It didn't begin that way. When I first started drinking and using drugs, I was a party girl. I was in New York City. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. We went to the clubs all night and we partied all night and we stayed up for days and hit the after parties. And that's what we did. And 23 years later, after my first drink, I was prostituting, getting in strange men's cars to do what I needed to do to get what I needed to get to try to continue the party. The party had long since sailed, but I was still trying my best to stay in that altered state so that I didn't have to contend with the wreckage of the last 20 years.
Wow, that's deep.
That was the first time that I was, I may use some words that you've never heard before. And if I say some things you've never heard before, just let me know.
Okay. Go for it.
So at 40 years old, homeless, I was bouncing around trying to find a safe place to sleep. I would be up for days, but the time would come that I would have such delusional thinking and see things that weren't there that I knew I had to get some sleep. So I would find an abandoned house and find a way to get in and lay down and pass out. That's the type of sleep that you no one can wake you up from. And I would sleep for 24 hours. And when my eyes would open, sometimes my clothes would be gone. I would have no idea who had found me there, who had been there, who had been around my body, in my body. I didn't know. But I would just get up, go hit the street immediately, and do what I needed to do to get what I needed to get so that I could get altered again. But it got to the point where I couldn't drink enough or smoke enough crack to get altered again. So I would stay up for days so I could just feel something. And I was jumping around from abandoned house to people's couches, wearing out my welcome in this area, which I had done so many years before. Everywhere that I went, I would wear out my welcome because I was out of control. And someone had approached me and said, "Hey, you know, I know you're looking for a safe place to stay. I know this guy, his name's Hollywood, and he lets girls like you stay at his place." It was a trap house. It's where girls go to turn tricks and they get drugs and they, you know, it's a very dirty arena in life. Mm-hmm. And so I went to go stay at Hollywood's house. And a couple of days in, I heard this girl's voice in the other room screaming. And she was saying, "I'm gonna get that fucking bitch out of my house. Bitch, you better get the fuck out of my house. I'm gonna kill that hoe." And I'm like, I'm the only fucking bitch in this house. She needs to be talking to me. And I got off the bed and I put my pipe down. I still had my lighter in my hand and I opened the bedroom door. And there was this tiny little thing charging at me. I knew her. I knew her from the street. Her name was Tink. She was just like me, a white girl who had children that were living with her mom, just like I had children that were living with their grandparents. She was an addict, just like me, doing what she had to do to survive in the street. She was coming at me and she didn't want me there. That was her place to be. And I was challenging that, just being in the space, existing there. And she's charging at me. And I look over and I see a can of Raid on the top of a TV. And I grab it and I put the Raid up to the lighter. And I was thinking, if she's coming, I'm burning. And if she charged at me, got closer to me, I couldn't do it. I could not burn that girl's face. And in that particular moment, I realized that I didn't have what it took to be the head bitch in charge of the trap house.
Right.
Thank God. That was like this glimmer of hope that I had that she obviously didn't have. And she approached me, she jumped me, she cut my face with a piece of glass.
Wow.
I have a scar on my face here from it. And she had what it took to maintain her position there. I didn't. And thank God for that.
Yeah.
Glimmer of hope that I didn't view as hope at the time. At the time, I viewed it as vulnerable, weak. So I was on the ground. And I hear some people, some guys going, you know, you got her, that's enough, that's enough. And I didn't know she had cut me. And I got up off the floor, and the guys that were there recording it had these big eyes looking back at me. And I said, what? And they said, yo, she cut your face. She cut your face. And I just started, I went, and I felt and saw the blood all over my hand.
Wow.
I ran down the hall to the bathroom, barricaded myself with my ass on the door. And there I was staring at myself in a dirty mirror with my face bleeding, thinking, how the fuck did I get here?
Right.
I'm 40 years old. I have two children that I haven't seen in 5 or 6 years. Mm. How did I get here? And I was about 10 blocks from the nearest hospital. I hear the guy say, you can come out. She gone. So I walked down the hall and I grabbed a trash bag that was about, I don't know, a quarter full of the remaining remnants of my life. Mm. That's all I had left. And that's just not how it started. I had a glamorous life in New York City. I had children. I've had partners. We've had homes. Like, this is all I had. And I threw the bag over my shoulder like a broke-ass Santa. And I walked down the street in the blistering heat. It was around July 4th in South Florida. And it was the first time in my life that I ever said to myself, God, help me.
Wow.
I never considered that I even needed help. I was so arrogant in my addiction and so arrogant in my ways. And I walked to the hospital and they stitched up my face. And the police come in and what happened? I told them I fell, because I'm still in the street mentality that you don't
right
out. And I wasn't done yet. I just wanted to get my face to stop bleeding so I can go back out to the street and get drugs to do. But wow. At this point, my lip is sewn. I can't open my mouth to do what I need to do to get what I need to get. And for the first time in my life, I felt vulnerable, physically vulnerable to the life outside of the hospital. And for the first time, I didn't have that arrogant pump in my chest of walking down the street at 5 a.m. Like, I knew what I was doing and like I belonged there.
Mm-hmm.
I, for a few days, tried to continue that run, but it had lost its luster had there ever even been one there to begin with. But right. It was different. I was scared. And I had the opportunity from someone around that knew someone that went to treatment. I got into this treatment world. I was offered a scholarship to go into treatment. So
wow.
Of course I took the scholarship. I didn't want to, but I also was scared to stay where I was. And I had too much pride to reach out to my family and let them know what was going on. I really thought that I was flying under the radar and no right. one knew how bad it was. And no one did know how bad it was because none of my family members could possibly have imagined where I was and what I was doing. This is the stuff you see in movies, and those types of movies my family didn't watch.
Right.
I went to treatment. And I began to get my life on track. I began to understand how I'm going to now have to live with integrity. I didn't know what that was. That meant doing the next right thing, earning an honest dollar. I didn't know how to do that. I just thought I would forever get money from men frivolously and easily. So I went to treatment for the 30 days. I went to go live in a halfway house, which is where other women are doing the same thing that I'm doing, learning how to live with integrity, learning how to connect with a higher power so that we can have some type of power. And within 2 months of me living in the halfway house, I was completely diverted from my living with integrity and let's be sober and let's do this. I met a guy, and this guy took the complete wind out of me. I was so floored that I could be so magnetically attracted to someone, and it felt like I did when I was in high school, when I was 17. And so that became my brand new drug. That became my higher power, that feeling I was getting from this person. He was 10 years younger than me, and he had abs. And I thought, I'm living so right now at that I deserve this. This is what God is giving me. You know?
Yeah, I get it.
And so he and I began dating, and I knew from the start that the behaviors that I was seeing from this person didn't feel right to me, but I was confused because he was showing the same behaviors that my dad had shown me at home. Very volatile, very explosive, punching things, breaking things. And I'm like, oh, this is home to me.
Right, right.
And I have the power to love him so hard that it's going to stop.
Yeah.
So don't we that. I could control this. I could fix this. I could probably suck his dick good enough to make him stop doing anything. Because that was my greatest superpower.
Right.
So we dated for a while, and we continued with this pretty explosive, unstable relationship. But I was so proud that I got him because he was so young and so hot. And I felt like I was so old and so full of baggage. And during that time, I established relationships with my children again. I could have shown up so much better for them, but I was distracted. And my children were so used to getting no mom that they were fully willing to accept some mom.
Wow. And
I knew that. So I continued to do the bare minimum to show up for my boys so I could have a relationship with them, because that was the source of all of my shame and my guilt when I got sober. When you took my solution of drugs away, I was left feeling so shameful, like a real piece of shit person, because how could a mom disappear on their kids? Mm-hmm. So I'm in this moment, I'm fulfilling my needs, what I think I need for my children, so I can be less shameful and guilty. But my new drug was my boyfriend. So it continued in this realm for like a couple of years. And there were several behaviors that my husband would do that really I could feel in my body didn't feel right. Like it was uncomfortable, but right. I'd never felt anything uncomfortable that I didn't cover up with a drug or a drink. So I was unfamiliar with actually sitting in that stuff. Mm-hmm. And there were like unusual sexual requests. And I just thought, well, this just doesn't feel right to me because it's triggering me because of my past. I was always willing and ready to make an excuse and make it my fault. Never willing to be like, hey, this is just overpowering my boundaries and I don't need to dissect it or solve it. It just is. And the answer is no. And you can go out the door and never come back.
Right.
Wow. What a relief that would have been had I been able to do that. I can do that now, girl. I can do that now.
I'm so proud of you. That's a lot of work, right? That's a lot of work, because you're talking about, you know, 2 decades of not doing that, of not saying out the door with the drugs, out the door with the drinking, out the door with prostitution, out the door, right? You weren't used to that either, right? So at the same time, you got to give yourself grace because you didn't know. And you don't know how to sit in your own body. You never did that before. Like immediately you ran to something. That's super powerful. So your new drug is the new man.
New drug is a new man. And boy, he was putting it on me in the crossing my boundaries, but I didn't know I had boundaries. Right. Only looking back do I see what that feeling was and what I was experiencing. And these behaviors continued. There were, he had told me along the way that he believed he was gender fluid. Mm-hmm. And I'm an old ass crackhead that has never heard that word before.
Right.
I don't know what you're talking about, but you're hot and I really don't care what's coming out of your mouth.
Right.
So let's just keep it moving here.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't care. And along the way, there were requests, like he wanted to wear women's underwear and it wouldn't feel good to me, but I would say, whatever, I can handle this. It's no big deal. He's hot, whatever. I always, right. And this is just a theme in my whole life, that I would put up with massive amounts of shit and be like, it's okay. I can handle it. I got this. Mm-hmm. It's all good. And I just continued doing that along the way when different behaviors continued to evolve. Mm-hmm. So I try my best to control a lot of it by saying, what's wrong with you? You need therapy. If you don't go get therapy, you have to move out. And mm-hmm. he would go get therapy and the behaviors would stop. And then they would creep back in. And then I would say, I'm kicking you out. You're moving out. Get your shit together and then you can come back. He would move out. And then he would do what I said and move back in and the behaviors would stop. So I thought I was this all powerful. Mm-hmm. He's going to do whatever I say. He's always willing to evolve for us. There was so many different things going on in my head, but all I knew was that I was capable of controlling all of this. And we end up getting married. Everything is wonderful bliss. My children are in my life. I hadn't had a drink or a drug in years. We moved to LA and I'm jet setting. We moved to LA from South Florida and I'm jet setting back and forth. My career as a hair artist is blowing up. When I got sober and had to learn to make an honest dollar, I became an assistant at a hair salon. That ended up evolving into this incredible platinum blonding hair career, where within 2 years I was getting international recognition for my blonde.
Wow.
So I'm like, look what I've done. I'm doing all of this. We move out to LA, jet setting back and forth. I see my kids often, and the behavior started to creep back in. We went a year free. Like, I'm thinking, this guy has turned into Buddha. Look what I've done.
Right.
And I didn't know this, but every time I would leave LA and travel back to South Florida, when he was alone, he would dress up in my clothes. And these behaviors were coming back around when I wasn't around. Easy scapegoat to blame me. So he was beginning to manipulate the fact that, well, you shouldn't be leaving me. This is what I'm going to do when you leave. Mm. But I wasn't going to not leave. I loved coming to South Florida, seeing my clients, making a shit ton of money and going back. But it started to become a problem because he would begin to really freak out when the time for me to leave was like coming up. He was so stressed and I didn't understand at the time why there was so much stress. I know now because those behaviors would shoot to the priority list for him and it was scary. You know, like I don't think he really wanted to be this way. It just was like a compulsion that happened. And as long as I was around, he could keep it at bay. But as soon as I left the scene, they were cooking. You know, so for about a week, there was an explosion of deliveries to the apartment of bras and panties and Victoria's Secret and sports bras. And I knew that my husband had a propensity to want to wear women's clothes. And I had made peace with it because at the end of the day, my husband is a professional bodybuilder who I'm magnetically attracted to. And at the end of the day, he's in the bed with me as my husband. So
right.
Life is too short to pass judgment or care about some fucking clothing.
Right.
And I made it okay. Didn't feel good, but I was making sense of it and making my own narrative in my head as to why I'm okay with this. One night, the bra and panties made their way into the bed. And I said, listen, if you ever want to have sex with me again, you'll cut the shit. I'm not attracted to this. It's not happening. began to shut down and kind of go into himself. And I'd never seen that. I'd always seen more of an explosion from him when I was battling or defending or anything that wasn't going his way or he didn't want to talk about. There was more of a that energy. And this particular night was an inward, sad energy. And I'm like, what the fuck's going on? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And he's just like, I just don't think you should have control over what I wear. And I'm like, you're right. No one should have control over anyone, what they wear. And I said, I'm not trying to control it. I'm just letting you know there's consequences for that. I don't like it.
Right, right.
And he was just withdrawn and kind of stumbling over his words. And I'm like, you better fucking start talking. I'm like, I don't know what's going on, but this isn't working. And he just was stuttering. And I just talk, please. And he said, I think I might be trans. And I didn't care what was coming out of his mouth because my husband was sitting there. So it didn't really make sense to me as to what was happening in that moment. I'm like, okay, right. So what does that mean? What does that mean for me? What are you talking about? Right. And he's just like, I just feel more comfortable wearing women's clothes. I'm like, I know. So we know this. And he's like, and I'm like, what? Spit it out. He's like, and I want to take hormones. But mind you, even that didn't puncture me at all because him being a professional bodybuilder, I was used to there being hormones and shots and all I've been seeing this for years.
Right.
Okay, whatever. What's that going to do? And he's like, it's probably going to soften my features. I'm like, I don't care. You're like so chiseled. You could probably afford to have some rounding of the face. I don't care, whatever. And he's like, and I'm like, and what? And he said, and give me breasts. And that was the one physical manifestation that I couldn't say, okay, whatever.
Right.
Because I was able to visualize the difference of what that would look like on my husband.
Right.
And my body, I felt it just crack. And I just began to tremble, like from deep within my soul. And it just like took over. I was so angry that the man I loved and was so magnetically attracted to wanted to change. What about me? What about what I like? What about what I want?
Right, right.
I felt very easily sacrificed in that moment, which brought me back and reminded me of how I was treated as a little girl in our home.
Wow.
My dad was very violent and disruptive. And I'm the one that caught the brunt of all of that. Not my mom. She probably got it before I was born, but mm-hmm. seemed more than happy to not be getting it now that I was here. My brother and sister were very passive children and quiet, and they would just run to their room because they were scared of my dad. But I was more of like a chest pumper. Like, what? What are we doing? From an mm-hmm. early age. And so I would get the shit kicked out of me often. But I grew up thinking that I was born to take on that role. That I was the one that was born to be sacrificed so that it would protect my mom, my brother, and my sister. So feeling that at 5 and feeling this, I was now 42, 43, I felt worthless and sacrificed. Like it, all it did was just justify that yes, I was born to be sacrificed.
Wow. 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 It strengthened the narrative that you had already.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could imagine that also felt like a big betrayal too, right? I mean, I'm sure that's not, that wasn't his intention, but mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. At the moment, that's how you feel. I'm sure that felt like such a betrayal.
The word betrayal never really made its way into my psyche or my vocabulary. I just didn't know why I wasn't important enough
right.
to not change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, why? How could there possibly be anything more important in your life than me? You vowed to love and cherish me till death do us part. Like, his actions throughout our marriage had shown me that I was the most important thing. Right. And I never thought for a moment there was anything that could trump that. I was so angry.
I can imagine.
For months, I tried all of my defective ways that I had used in the past to try to make it fucking stop.
Right.
I tried to make it stop. The shaming that I laid upon that person is repulsive. I have made amends.
Good.
The shaming, and then my usual controlling method for men was to leave. I'm like, I'm leaving. I'm going back to Florida. So I figured that he would follow me. Every guy had always followed me. So I knew that that would work. And after months of my husband not meeting me in Florida, I thought, well, I'm still not feeling better. My mm-hmm. body is still trembling. I'm not getting what I want. So like a good fucking addict and alcoholic, I started drinking again.
Oh, that's so sad. That's hard.
And then I began using the relapse as a manipulation tool. Look what you're making me do. I'm doing this because of you. And my husband, for the last, you know, couple of years before that, had been going to therapy. And I had gone through the day after he told me he might be trans. He went to work the next day. And I began going through all of his shit, all the papers, all the folders, all the this. I had never had any need or desire to do anything like that. And I was going through everything. And I found a bunch of therapy homework paper. And 6 to 7 months prior to the news, he and his therapist had been working on her homework.
Oh.
That was the moment where I felt betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
That there were conversations being had and I was in the dark. Would it have changed anything? No.
Right.
It would not have changed. I still would have thought that I could control it. I can make it go away. Nah, live in denial. I was very good at weaving new patchwork onto my denial quilt.
Mm-hmm,
I would have just done the same thing. It wouldn't have changed anything, but it was very hard to make peace with the fact that there were those conversations going on. And my husband was showing no signs of those types of conversations going on, just blind. So it made me feel stupid. A lot of this made me feel stupid. Why did I not leave when I saw the first signs of things that didn't feel good to me? Dummy. Why did I stay when the list goes on?
Right.
I just felt like a real dummy. So during that relapse, when I was trying to convince my husband that it was his fault, so stop doing what you're doing so I can be better.
Right.
This motherfucker said to me, I do not take responsibility for your relapse. I thought,
he's right.
Where is my codependent partner? We have been codependent for years now. So that wasn't working. My relapse manipulation wasn't working. But once I was in the relapse, I was in it. Within 3 or 4 months, I had gotten kicked out of the HOA of the development where I was living. I was kicked out for suspicious behavior. Because when I'm smoking crack, I'm suspicious.
Okay, so you didn't just go back to drinking then. You relapsed. You relapsed.
That's my drug of choice.
That is hard.
That's my drug of choice. And I was in the area where I knew exactly where to find it. I was back in South Florida. And right. I had an option. I had sober resources I could have reached out to, but I felt terminally unique in my own situation, and everyone right. can fuck themselves.
Right. You were angry.
And feeling unique mm-hmm. as an addict is a very dangerous place to be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wasn't willing to understand that my feelings are the same as someone else's feelings that have experienced something in with different details. I didn't want to. I just wanted my pain to go away. I wanted to punish me for being an idiot. And I wanted to punish her for hurting me.
Right.
That relapse lasted about 6 months, when none of my manipulation tactics worked. And I was ruining my life because my partner was brave enough to live their authentic life. I thought, now that's a moronic thing to do. Destroy my life because mm-hmm. my partner is brave to live their authentic life.
That's deep. So, what brought you to that realization? What was that moment that you're like, what the am I doing? What was that?
I guess I don't remember this phone call, but I had called her on the West Coast, and she said that I told her I wanted to kill myself. In all of my years of fucking crazy, I had never had that thought. I was arrogant. But she told me that I called her and told her I couldn't live like this anymore. I remember the phone call, but I don't remember the words. And the next day, she immediately flew out to South Florida to get me out of the hotel where I was staying with another crackhead. And she took me to her parents' house in Boca to just get me away from that situation. And she told me, I'm not leaving until you're in a stable situation. When I woke up after about 2 days of sleeping, that's when that feeling of this person who I have belittled and shamed and hated on and wished death upon for the past, it had been probably 8 months since I left LA. This person who has been living their life with no support or help from me, supposed to love them more than anything, has come to help me. What am I doing with my life?
And right.
There was a bubble of compassion that started to like fizz up, and I could feel the judgment kind of being like kicked to the side, and more compassion was coming up. And the compassion that I began to feel for her initiated my road to recovery, but the compassion for her began to pale in comparison of the compassion I began to feel for myself. Oh, it took me some time being off drugs. It took me like about a month or so to start feeling like all this energy that I'm putting towards being unconditionally loving to her is how I should be treating myself. Mm-hmm, and that's when I really started to heal.
That's so good. That's so good. And you also went through, it sounds like you also had an explosive personality too, right? So you went completely all in on the drugs and the drinking and everything, and then explosive in your career, where when you started to, you know, be sober, you went explosive there and like blew up there, right? Explosive in your relationship, explosive with going back. So you have that personality too, where you have a lot of drive. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it didn't always lead you to the directions that you wanted, but there's that drive in you that doesn't die. Right. Wow. And that's an amazing thing to have innately within you.
My mother always told me it was my most exhausting trait.
Yeah.
Just pick a team and play for it. You don't have to do everything, you know?
Right.
I've always been that way. If there's something I'm going to do, I'm going to do it.
So how was that process with Now, coming back to yourself and your senses and knowing that you want more for you, how was that healing process also with your kids? Because now they lost you again for another 6 months, I'm assuming, right?
I am grateful that both of my, well, my youngest son, he was 15 at the time. His dad understood what I was going through because I was, I communicated with him. So he kept him away. So my Donovan, I went a few months without talking to him, but he's none the wiser. He never really knew what was happening. My oldest son, during my relapse, who I had begged God for years to bring one of my boys home to me to live with me. During that relapse, my oldest son knocked on my door and said, "It's your turn." And I'm standing there, having been up for 3 days, weak, shaking, and I'm like thinking, oh my God, my prayers have been answered and look who I am.
Right, right.
For a few days, I was able to hide it from him. And then one day I woke up and he had written a note to me that said, "Mom, I know you're going through a lot. Stay away from crackheads. I know you can do better. I will be back, but I'm leaving for now." He has now lived with me for a year.
Oh, so good.
He's 22.
So good. And that's so good.
And the biggest healing modality, I tried everything to make myself feel better. I wanted to heal myself enough to be able to be with the new person, the she. I knew if I could dissect my disdain, dissect the fabric of my cloth, I knew if I could just get to the soul of me, I could see through the transition and we could be together. And that would be great. Unfortunately, we're not just souls walking across the earth. We are fucking humans.
Right.
So you can't just be the soul. So no matter what people say, oh, soul to soul. No. It's human condition, cellular level. There are things that live there that we don't even know anything about.
Right. And there's also preferences too. I mean, there's also things we like and don't like, and that's nature. That's, you know, that's what we like and don't like, you know?
But so, I want to be a soul.
How did that work out for you?
It didn't. And I continued to beat my head against that wall for another 6 months and not feeling any better. And then I really began to take a hard look about how I showed up in the relationship and how I showed up in life with my need to control people to meet my expectations. I had been doing it my whole life and I was continuing to try to control something about me that was not controllable to meet my expectations. You talk about suffering. I was suffering. Yeah. And I began to discover how I was responsible for my broken heart in the marriage. Yeah. I was responsible for that because of how I showed up. If I had been a healed, wise woman, there's no chance I would have gotten that far. I wouldn't have gotten that far because I would have been able to recognize what my body was telling me, what my highest self was telling me. And I wouldn't have tried to make sense of it or judge it. And so that's the clarity and the serenity that I'm able to live in now, that it's okay that I'm not going to be able to be with my husband as she, because that was tough for me. I felt like I was unevolved. Felt like I was not unconditionally loving, because
I understand that.
I felt like I was bad, which again, the narrative on my childhood, the nickname I had was the littlest and the meanest. So I was really trying to outrun that narrative by proving to myself that I am the nicest, the most loving, the most accepting, the most, and I just couldn't get there with that situation, but I got there with that for me. I accept me. I love me. I choose me and my wants and my needs. just like she.
I was just going to say that.
Mm-hmm. To choose her and her right. wants and her needs. And how brave. Like, we look at that as a society as being selfish. We're told that choosing yourself and your wants and your needs are selfish. And it's not. It's liberating. It's healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Choose yourself.
Yeah. I think, you know, yes. I think when you choose yourself as well, and you realize that the other person's going to be okay. It's not like you're murdering somebody or doing anything like that, but you know, the person's going to get through it. But you know, your husband also was already doing a lot of the work before you even were aware that a lot of work was being done. Right. So he was a little bit ahead of the game. So tell me now, like, who are you today? Like, are you like, 'cause right now this conversation is very impactful. And I think a lot of people are going to be able to listen to this and take away so many nuggets about overcoming and forgiving yourself, right? Because I'm sure you had to go through that, Allison, where you were also not just thinking of you and your needs and your self-care, but forgiving yourself too, right? For all of the hardship, because there's a lot of hardship. Now, yes, we went over it because you two decades, but I know that means every day you lived it every day for 2 decades, right? That was a real life thing. Of course, when we're telling a story, we can't go through it. Well, on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, you know, we can't do that, but you know, I know that must be a big thing for you too, to learn not just to forgive yourself, maybe to forgive others. The shame thing is huge for people. Shame is a big driver in hurting yourself, right? So what's your message today? How are you impacting the world today? What are you doing out here today?
When I was going through the transition, I was doing my best to try to find support. And being in Hollywood in LA before I moved back to Florida, I couldn't find any support. I couldn't find any women that were experiencing what I was going through. I mean, I knew that Kris Jenner had gone through it, but how the hell am I going to get in touch with her?
Right.
So I wanted to, and I have written a book that I'm putting the final touches on. And it's a book about when the life you choose doesn't choose you. And not having the capacity to understand what's happening or respond to what's happening and all the freaking cuckoo ways I tried to handle it, and just kind of let people know that you're not alone and you can go through that shit, but you don't have to live there.
Right.
And just let them know that the things that I did to help myself and the things I learned about myself and realizing that this is an opportunity for you. It's like, oh, it wasn't happening in the moment, it was happening to me.
Right.
But my husband's transition has been the greatest transformation for me. I cannot believe the place that I sit with peace and confidence. And I know that I'm now in a position to be able to help other women expose
so good
those defective patterns. All they do is diminish our value.
So and if, good.
And if we have diminished value, then we feel the need to have to like hold on to someone, control, fix, oh, it's me, justify it. But if you can expose those defective patterns and own your value, then you can let go of the need to tolerate or justify or control anyone. And the fastest way to control your life is to stop controlling the people around you.
Yeah. Right.
It seems so simple.
Right.
But that's
it
how
does.
We show up in life. We control people, places, things so that they meet our expectations.
Right, right, right. But trying to control the outcome of what it is we're looking for, what we want. Yeah.
And if you're trying to control or manipulate the outcome, you're not living in your truth, because that outcome isn't the truth.
Right, right. Wow, Allison, holy shenanigans, girl. You dropped a lot of bombs here today, like a lot of amazing, amazing point of views. I think, you know, I'm going to have to like watch this over and over again, because there was so much beauty in that. in that mess, right? I think you talk about, you know, the message coming out of the mess, right? And I think there's so much beauty out of ashes, right? So things you've had to literally burn down, like burn down your past, burn down everything and burn down that pain, let the marriage go, like all of that to get beauty out of those ashes, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just absolutely phenomenal that you are willing, able, and vulnerable enough to say, this is my life, I own it, and I'm going to do something to help some other people, because lots of us still live in that shame of things we've done, mm-hmm. right? And you're so free, and you're so freeing to listen to. So I'm really, really grateful for you. And I'm grateful for you sharing this amazing message, your voice, and also compassion and love too, for people who are struggling, like your husband was, right? Now a she. I mean, this is something huge about you, that you were able to still, even though you were going through the pain and all of that, that you come like full circle. And you come to this place where you're like, you know what? I don't have to be married to a trans just to show that I'm accepting, right? And just to show that I still value this person's life and still value them as a person. Right. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Thank you for this message. Thank you for coming on Straight Talk. I think it's probably going to be my best episode because you were so real and vulnerable. And these are the conversations I freaking love to have, because this is what transforms the world. This mm-hmm. truth. Right. Yes, so Allison, I ain't letting you go, though, without you letting my audience know how they're going to follow you and support you, because your journey is freaking amazing. So give us that.
You. I currently have IG. It's at Boss Doss Hair. You can see the Boss Doss. How fitting is it that Allison Boss Doss was forced to surrender control?
Right.
How did that happen?
I love that.
My Instagram is at Boss Doss Hair, and my TikTok is The Real Boss Doss.
I freaking love it. You are the real boss.
My book will be coming out. The working title is The Unbossing.
Wow. Listen, I know that I'm going to be seeing you on stages all over the freaking world. So I'm like, yeah, she was on my show, y'all, because I know her, because, you know, you're explosive. Like you were explosive also in your hair career, right? And how you blew that up. There's no way this is not going to blow up for you. There's just no way. No way. Right. So when you blow up, don't forget the little people. Okay. Come back.
Yes, Nina.
I really love you, Allison. Thank you so much for being here. You're the best. Guys, I told you, my God, mind blown, right? I know your minds are melting over listening to this. And I really appreciate you guys. Make sure you follow this woman. She's going to be doing phenomenal things. I want to make sure that you buy her book. Support her, go onto her TikTok, go onto Instagram. I'm sure she's answering questions if you have any. So get on there and support her, because when somebody can come on here and truly be raw and authentic with you, that means they are worth having in your ecosystem, in your network, somebody who's actually going to show up real and not bullshit, right? So thank you guys for being here. This is Nina Perez, Straight Talk, No Sugar Added. If I had another mic, I'd drop it. Till next time.